This episode is sponsored by B&H Photo, the professional source for photos, video, audio equipment, and much more. B&H Photo is a smart way to shop with low prices, top-notch customer service, fast shipping, and no sales tax in 48 states. To learn more and check out the special deals for our listeners, visit bnhphoto.com/GFQ. That's bhphoto.com/GFQ. Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/Andrew and enter promo code Andrew at checkout. Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by the one, the only, Mr. Paul Theroux. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well.
It's the first What the Tech of the New Year, and I'm celebrating by having my favorite drink in the world.
It's not rosé.
A bottle of very inexpensive Pinot Grigio.
Oh. Okay.
Santa Marina, product of Italy.
Product of Long Island.
It's a vintage from 2016.
Nice.
It's a wonderful wine, and I'm going to be enjoying this while we do our first show of 2017. Now, last week we didn't do a show due to, I think there was a whole bunch of issues on why we didn't do a show last week. But this week we're going to do our worst of 2017. Since the year is over, Paul and I have gotten a chance to reflect back and see all the terrible products that were announced or released, all the mistakes that happened this year, and this is our list. It's not a top, you know, there's no order as far as what the worst thing was and what the best thing was. We could be missing some stuff, but this is what we thought of when we came up with the list. I know Paul had a tremendous list that he lost.
Andrew, let me tell you, I have to really think, put my mind back to last week, because remember, it was between Christmas and New Year's, and I had a kind of a constant flow of people coming in and out of my house, relatives and friends. And on that day, in the morning, I actually did something I never do for this podcast. I spent hours preparing.
You did. I know you did.
And, I know you did. I did. I literally spent hours. I went back on my site to the first article from 2017, and I went straight through the year. And when I found something that sucked, I pulled it out, and I put it into a document. At that time, I was experimenting with an application called Write with an exclamation point, which is actually pretty good, by the way. And I came up with a huge list. And when you contacted me at whatever point during the day and you were like, hey, is it okay if we don't do this today? You know, I was like, yeah, great. And I'm like, and I think I told you at the time, I'm like, dude, I just made this great list for the show, so we can use it next week. That'll be great. I then took a nap. I slept for about 3 hours. I slept through my my weekly work call, which I assume would not happen because it was the weekly, holiday week. It did in fact happen. They were wondering where the frick I was. And I was asleep. So anyway, flash forward a week later, and I didn't just figure this out today. I actually noticed this the other day, but over the weekend I switched computers. And so I brought all my old documents over and whatever. And
are you in a new office now?
Yeah. I also moved my office. That happened over the holiday week as well.
To the White House, apparently.
What's that?
You moved into the White House.
Yeah, I'm at the White House. Going to address the nation later today about the snowpocalypse that is happening.
Yeah, that's happening
everywhere except here. So anyway, I got all the stuff. I'm like, here we go. And one thing I did notice early on was I tried to open the document in Markdown Pad, which is what I usually use, and it was all corrupted. So I reinstalled Write, and it is not. It's gone. Not everything, but I would say about 80% of what I listed out is disappeared, and I don't know why. I don't know what happened. I didn't save it, I guess, or I didn't. I don't know what happened, but I have the first three items, so I have a very short list. But I will say, I don't know. I haven't seen your list, so I don't know what we've done exactly. But I think we should mention, even though we didn't really know about this in 2017, possibly the very worst thing that happened last year.
Oh.
Was this Intel thing?
Yeah, this changes our entire concept.
I think
of this,
I think we, whatever we might have thought was number one, I think this immediately bumps into the first place position.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. I want to take some time and talk about that uninterrupted. But before we do, I want to talk about a great sponsor. And while we're doing that, Paul, could you do me a favor and back up from the mic a little bit? That's going to be my trick.
No, I will not. You know what I'm going to do?
I'm just going to put it right in my face.
I'm going to push the mic back.
Look at that. Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah, you can push the mic back a little bit because it's just a little bit too loud. And I know I'm going to get the emails from people complaining. And I'm sorry about that. I refuse to argue with
Also, while we're getting complaints from readers.
Yeah.
Alexa, turn off the lights.
Did a great job.
I don't have Alexa, but people listening to this do.
Oh, Alexa.
Happy New Year's.
Alexa, who is Paul Theriot? All right, we're not going to do that. I do want to do that, actually. The more wine I have, the more I'll do that. But before we continue, I want to talk about a wonderful, wonderful advertiser of ours. And someone, this company's been with us for a long time, and we've been with them for a long time. And that's Casper.com. Casper Mattresses. I've been sleeping on a Casper mattress. It's going to be 3 years now that I've been sleeping on a Casper mattress. And the reason why is that Casper mattresses are designed by humans for humans. The original Casper mattress combined multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface with just the right sink and with the right bounce. Paul's all about the bounce. I'm all about the sink in my mattress. That's why we sleep on different sides of the bed. We never go over to each other's side. That is a fact, right? We sleep in the same bed every night. Just how podcasts work. We tuck each other in and then we go to bed. That's all.
Wow.
It's not how it works. Every podcaster does that. You could use our code and get $50 towards a select mattress purchase by going to Casper.com/Andrew. Now, in all seriousness, I want to talk about this because I was at my father-in-law's house on Friday. I was at my father-in-law's house on Friday and he's one of these guys that knows about Casper and is not very tech savvy, unfortunately. And he saw an ad that kind of looked like Casper and he ordered this mattress a while ago. And I was talking to him about this whole ordeal and they made it very much like it's a Casper mattress. And he ordered this mattress and he paid for probably a little bit more than what you're going to pay with Casper, to be honest. He bought this mattress, Paul, and it comes in a box and everything and he puts it together and it was nearly falling apart within 3 days of having it. The thing was just so poorly made. It was atrocious. I'm not going to repeat their name because I don't want to go into it, but it's similar to Casper. He sent it right back and he called me. He goes, I ordered the mattress you were telling me to order. I go, you ordered a Casper? He goes, no, I ordered this. I go, no, you got to order a Casper. So he sent the mattress back and he ordered the Casper mattress. Finally, after weeks of convincing him to do it, he finally ordered it and he's been sleeping on it for a couple months now. Absolutely loves it. So that is a great example of someone that really doesn't know about mattress stuff. He's never heard me do a live read. He just knows that I use him as an advertiser. Bought a mattress because he needed it and it was terrible. And then he went and got a Casper mattress and it was everything he wanted it to be. So I love those stories. If you have purchased a Casper mattress, send me an email or message us on Instagram, on Twitter, because I want to hear these stories and it's great. I know somebody ordered one during Black Friday and sent me a link also. That was cool. You get $50 off your mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/Andrew and using the promo code Andrew at checkout. I want to thank Casper for supporting the show and for being an unbelievable product because I honestly, the best mattress I've ever had. And I say it all the time and I say it in outside of this realm of doing a podcast. I say it so much, Paul, honestly, when I have my corporate meeting every Tuesday afternoon at my job, they all want me to start it off with a Casper live read. I swear to God, I wish I was making this up. I wish this was part of my copy. I do a live read in a corporate executive meeting every single week, and they find it hysterical, and three of them have bought Casper mattresses already.
We do have, I mean, one of the things about advertising and advertising on podcasts in particular, I don't usually engage, with this part of it. But I feel particularly comfortable with the things that I actually use and feel comfortable recommending. Yeah. You know, Audible is a good example of that. And Casper is too. We have multiple Casper mattresses. We have multiple, in fact, we might have as many as 6 Casper pillows.
And you bought them, by the way.
Yeah, we paid for them. Yeah. We actually like this stuff quite a bit.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, they're excellent.
It's not like shilling for some company because we have to.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess we would if we had to.
I'm going to tell you know what? I've done that once. I've done an ad once on this show that I told you beforehand that I didn't want to do the ad. But It was a favor. It was like we had an advertiser, and they pulled out of their commitments to all the podcasts that they were doing, and this was given to me as a filler. And I had already, you know, I had the money in my budget and everything. I had already budgeted out the year, and I did the ad. It was only 2 weeks that I did the ad, and I felt I hated doing the ad. First of all, I had told Paul, I'm like, are you okay with me doing this ad? And I was hoping he would say no. And he's like, no, it's fine. And I ended up doing it, and I felt weird for the first time doing an ad that I've never wanted to do. And I said, I'll never do this again. And I just got offered an ad for a company that I'm sure they're wonderful, but it just doesn't fit our product. Our audience. You know what? It most likely will. It would work really well with our audience because we have an older audience. It just, I didn't feel right delivering those lines.
Yeah, I mean,
I have this much integrity.
We'll run into
Paul.
These situations, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, you will. I'm telling you, with your podcast, you're going to run into it eventually.
Sure.
But Brad, that'll do to live reads. That's how it works.
Well, I mean, a couple of sponsorships we've had on First Ring have been great. Like the products that are excellent. Yeah. So that really helps. Yeah. And I know that the guys who are selling ads are looking to not come to me with something ridiculous.
And you know, no Mangria ads and no Fleshlight ads for Paul. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah.
Someone that I really respect in the business. He's always had great integrity with advertising. And a couple of years ago, he did a very sleazy ad on his show. And that was the moment that I said, I won't ever do this.
Yep. You're dead to me.
Let's talk about the Intel story, because this is the biggest one, right? I'm gonna go talking about this. I know. But we haven't spoken about it on the show.
No, I know. It's the gift that keeps on giving too. It's kind of beautiful.
So let's start off from the beginning for people who are not really, because it was a holiday break. So shockingly, that's when it came out.
There's the beginning in the sense of like when it actually happened, although we didn't find out about that until this week. And then there's the beginning, which is kind of how we found out about it. And basically, some online publications decided to publish information about massive security vulnerabilities in Intel and in other chips, microprocessors, that some claimed would require Microsoft and various Linux organizations to fundamentally re-architect their operating systems, that these flaws were so severe that they would have to change.
And it wasn't just one. It was multiple. It was a multitude of issues that they had discovered.
Yeah, I guess there are two primary flaws.
There were two major ones, and then there were smaller ones also from what I read in a report that they had discovered.
Okay. Well, you know, the issue with this kind of thing, the issue with any kind of security vulnerability release is timing, right? The responsible thing to do, and the thing that the industry by and large does do, except for Google, by the way, is when you find a vulnerability in a product, you go to the company that makes it and you say, hey, we found this problem. We will not disclose it until you fix the problem. Now, you get into some squishy areas here because ideally that company, if it's Microsoft or Google or Amazon or whoever, will patch the vulnerability, preventing exploits in a reasonable amount of time. And we have differing opinions about what a reasonable amount of time is. Google gives, I'm doing this off the top of my head, so forgive me if this isn't exactly right, but I think Google gives companies 60 days. And if they don't fix the vulnerability, Google will still reveal it to the world. And Microsoft in the past year has gone to Google several times and said, you know, WTF, basically, what are you doing? Like, we need time to fix this. We have billions of users and it's complicated, many different versions of Windows, whatever it is. Google doesn't care. You know, that's what they do. All right. So in this case, Google actually did find the vulnerability and discovered that it was in basically every major microprocessor, actually vulnerabilities, I should say. It's not specific to Intel, which was one of the mistakes that some of the early reports had. Also, I should note, the early reports came out less than a week before these vulnerabilities were in fact going to be made public.
Interesting.
Basically, what the industry was waiting on was for everyone to be up to speed. And so you have multiple players here. They're the hardware makers, the chipset makers, which are Intel, AMD, and then the various ARM Holdings-based, you know, ARM affiliates like Qualcomm and so forth. There are the operating system vendors, Microsoft, Google, Apple, Amazon, whatever. And then there are also just the other players involved, the people who have chipsets that are built into non-traditional computing devices like routers and whatever. And so the entire industry kind of has to fix this, because what you don't want to do is come out and say, hey, we found these huge vulnerabilities. They're applicable to everybody. Almost everybody has fixed it, but these guys haven't, so they're screwed. You know, you want to kind of wait until everyone gets it fixed. Kind of amazingly, by the way, it took over 6 months for these fixes to come through.
Yeah.
And there's some controversy. Actually, there's a lot of controversy. There are apparently varying levels of performance impact when you apply the patch, depending on the system you're using, depending on the workload that that system is doing. The performance, according to different reports, is anywhere from like 0.3%, which I take to be PC desktop running Windows, to 30%, which is internet-based server running Linux.
Interesting.
And in other words, we can fix one of the problems, but when we do, it's going to hose the performance. So faced with the fact that there were some unfortunately high-profile reports about this vulnerability about a week before anyone was ready to go public, Intel decided yesterday to make a statement explaining their side.
Yeah.
It was full of lies.
Okay. So where do we begin with that?
I'm going to have to bring up the document because I don't want to paraphrase this part of it. It's important that we get this right. And so let me do that. Sorry.
So they were forced into.
Well, here's the thing.
Making the announcement at the moment that they did.
Yeah, yesterday was a little complicated. Intel, I think, tried to get out on front in front of this, and they issued a very long statement, you know, 500, 600 words, something like that. Instead of just saying, "Hey, we've known about this for some time, we're working on it," whatever, they were like, they actually addressed some of the misstatements that were made in some of the reports, like in the Register and so forth.
Oh my God,
this was a mistake, because the way that they addressed these complaints, these statements, was wrong. It was just wrong. So I'm going to give you three examples. These are the three that are in the article that I wrote today. I think these are the big ones. These are misrepresentations. These are lies. I mean, there's no cute way to say it. Intel says recent reports that these exploits are caused by a bug or a flaw, and they use little quotes there in both words, and are unique to Intel products are incorrect. Okay. These exploits are caused by a bug or a flaw. Those words mean the same thing. They are. These are flaws that have been present in microprocessors for over 20 years.
Yeah.
Not just Intel.
Significant time, yeah.
So that's wrong.
Yeah.
It's a lie. And are unique to Intel products. Now, it's fair to say they are not unique to Intel products.
Well, tell that to AMD.
well, that's AMD's another story. There are all kinds of parties here who have handled this poorly. AMD's one of them, but Intel is the worst. They're really miscasting what's happening here, and I find this to be kind of incredible. They said that contrary to some reports, any performance impacts are workload dependent, and for the average computer user, should not be significant. Now, here's the thing: I don't believe there were any reports that said explicitly that the performance impact would be workload independent. So, like in other words, I don't think anyone said the performance impact to the fixes for this vulnerability across all processor types will be 30%. I think what was written was something along the lines of it could be up to 30%, we're hearing. And that figure is correct. That's the figure that people believe fixing this on Linux, that's going to be the performance.
Yeah.
It is fair to say, because I think it's true, that the impact on Windows-based PCs to end users will not be that significant. In other words, you probably won't notice a performance hit. But they left out the important part of it, which is that we will absolutely notice a tremendous performance hit on servers, cloud-based servers in particular.
Yeah, because it's all Linux-based. Yeah.
Yeah. Cloud-based part is the tough one, and this is the worst Intel lie of all. And this is lying by omission. Early on in the statement, they say Intel believes that these exploits do not have the potential to corrupt, modify, or delete data. Now, that statement is true, but it leaves out the important part. These exploits do have not the potential, but the capability to steal your data. That's the important part. Yeah, they may not be able to come back and corrupt your data. They may not be able to come back and modify or delete your data, but they can steal your data. And that's the reason this is so serious.
Wow.
So if you imagine like a, without even understanding the architecture of how different cloud systems work. We don't need to get into it to that detail. But if you think about what a cloud server really is, it's a data center. It could be a variety of data centers where companies' data is up in the cloud, and it's in storage, and it's in RAM, and it's protected, you know, from each other. In other words, I shouldn't, as a tenant of this cloud storage, be able to access your cloud storage. I shouldn't be able to access your data that's in memory, if it is in memory, somewhere else in the data center. I would, as a tenant, as a client of this thing, I would have no understanding of that. The exploit, the vulnerability that's in these processors is allowing just that. An exploit of this code would allow code running in a server in the cloud to access data from someone else's data, essentially, or access someone else's data. That's why it's so serious.
That's terrible.
It throws the fundamental value proposition of not just computing, but cloud computing kind of up in the air. It's like, well, look, if we can't trust this works, I mean, this is the fundamental security of the internet, is it, or at least of internet data. Intel's statements are crazy. Like they're off the wall irresponsible. Like it's for a company as mature and credible as Intel to say things like that.
But do you think do you think it's a fundamental belief what they're saying, or do you think this is just some lawyer doing damage control PR and their PR and their lawyers coming up with take full responsibility?
What I'm saying is, at the time when this thing was published, they knew that either everything was going to come out that day, later that day, which it did, or within the week. In other words, what we were waiting for originally was next Tuesday, which is Patch Tuesday, the second Tuesday of the month. This is the day that Windows would have been updated with their traditional. In other words, if this hadn't been disclosed the way it was, Microsoft and all the other operating system vendors would have released these updates. And I think the world would have caught wind of it, because basically they all would have been like, addresses a vulnerability that was found in microprocessors, blah, blah, blah. And it would have been like, look, everyone updated for these microprocessor vulnerabilities. Intel was going to come out with, I'm sure everyone was going to disclose it. Knowing that this was going to come out, and by the way, having 6+ months to prepare their statements and their rationale.
Yeah, it was terrible, actually. Yeah, for having 6 months.
What they came out with was something that less than 4 hours later was easily refuted. Like, this is not lawyer speak. This is patently false statements. And it's just incredible that a company like Intel could do something like that.
I guess,
incredible.
I mean, what's other than the patch, what's the solution here? Servers. Not necessarily. I mean, listen, as a consumer, you're really not. If it's a 0.3%, 0.0 whatever they said, it's not significant enough to even notice for 99% of people.
Right. PC users, phone users ultimately aren't going to have to worry about this, right? This stuff is being fixed, has been fixed in many cases. Microsoft, by the way, quietly released the fix into the Windows Insider program two builds ago, so probably early December. I don't remember exactly when that was. They released it publicly last night. So if you're on a normal non-insider version of Windows 10 or probably other versions of Windows that are supported, you have the fix. It's fixed. It's okay. The cloud is a little more complicated. I don't have the quote in front of me anymore, but there was a little bit I kind of left out of the quote that said something like, will be mitigated over time. And I think the point of that is that we have the big patch that has occurred, and it fixes one of the big problems. There may be a performance hit, and that performance hit is 0.3 to 30%. Let's just pretend that's the one.
Yeah.
Depending on the system, depending on what you're doing with it, whatever it is. Doesn't matter what the specifics are. We're not done patching it, right? And so over time, what's going to happen is the platform vendors, the hardware makers, the chipset makers are all going to keep looking at this and trying to figure out other ways to improve the situation. And so I think the security improves over time, but I think the performance will improve over time too, because now they're looking at it, in ways that will, okay, we know how we could fix the problem, but we also want to fix the problem without harming performance as much as possible.
Yeah.
And so I think we'll see further iterations of, you know, driver updates, firmware updates, software updates, whatever it is. And that this, if you're on a particular system running a particular workload that is particularly hard hit, I think that gets better over time. But the point of adding this to the 2017 worst of show, the point of making it number one, I think ultimately, is the amount of time that these companies have known about it, the quietness that's occurred, the amount of time it took them to fix anything.
Well, the amount of time it took them to leak, for this to leak is actually astonishing.
Well, yes and no. I guess the other half of it is that it's astonishing they were able to keep a lid on this for so long. You know, Microsoft is a closed company, and so, you know, they can release a software update to Windows in the Insider program, and no one would know the better. You know, no one would understand. They can patch Azure up on the cloud. No one even knows. But these patches are going into Linux, and people look at Linux. And I think the way that this came out is that people were, you know, like, what's this? Someone committed some code to the Linux kernel, and it's like, what is this thing doing? And, you know, people start looking at it, and it's like, something's going on here. I mean, you know, when it's all out in the open, I think that's part of the, maybe part of the story about how it gets disclosed early.
Yeah, it's really fascinating how this is playing out. Now, obviously, the next generation of chipsets that come out, they're not going to be patched. It's going to be fixed.
Maybe not. And actually, if you go, you can look up what Linus Torvalds has had to say about Intel today. It's actually not clear because basically, I mean, for all the differences in chip architectures, you know, CISC versus RISC, you know, back in the day, or Intel versus AMD versus Qualcomm versus whatever else is out in the world. The thing is, like, these flaws, I guess there are two major flaws, but let's say this flaw, whatever, actually exists in all of them. It's a fundamental aspect of chip design. And I won't pretend to understand it at any kind of a deep level. I don't. I'm not going to go down that path. But we collectively as an industry have set down this path 2 decades plus ago. And now, belatedly, we've discovered all that stuff we made.
It's problematic, crap. Yeah.
It's all screwed. Well, guess what? We don't have a new architecture taking over anytime soon. We're still making chips based on the same thing.
Wow.
And it's not entirely clear, you know, if the ninth generation Intel Core, you know, CPUs come out. I mean, there are going to be things built into the operating systems that run on the chips that help mitigate the effects of the flaw.
But it's a fundamental flaw still in there.
Fundamentally the flaw is still going to be there.
Yeah, I would imagine it is. If someone knows if it is or not, you know what? I should ask the hardware guys. They would know.
Yeah. Actually, Ryan Trout is a guy I'm hoping to talk to today. Yeah. Expert in this kind of stuff, but he's actually on Twitter right now. So
yeah. Ryan knows a tremendous amount about this.
Yep.
What is the... Actually, I just clicked on Ryan Schreiber. What's a Spectre Meltdown?
That's one of the two. Meltdown is one of the names. I think Spectre and Meltdown. Maybe those are the two names of the flaws.
The flaws, okay. Yeah. So I'm looking at it, and someone just said Spectre Meltdown. I'm like, the laptop? I'm like, no. It's all very interesting stuff. I started reading about this, and, you know, it depends. The problem is the narrative of who's writing the article.
Yes,
because depending on who's writing it, it was primarily just an Intel problem.
Oh yeah, no, and you know, I could see why Intel might take exception to that, but the issue is this: in terms of sheer processors out in the world that are impacted by this, like real world use, Intel is either number one or number two. I mean, you know, with Qualcomm or whatever.
Yeah.
This is the major issue, though, is the cloud and these servers. And it doesn't matter if they're running Linux or Windows or whatever. By the way, Microsoft claims they've already patched Azure and zero performance hit.
Oh, Mike, that's Microsoft's claim on Azure. Yeah. Okay.
And, okay, so I don't have any reason to discredit that. But, I mean, we know that people have said 30% with Linux. Whatever. I mean, this isn't about some kind of platform war. That's not the point.
No, it's about fixing a serious problem.
Yeah.
When you look at the fundamental architecture of an Intel, you know, a mainstream consumer and enterprise product line. I mean,
So the point here is, though, if you look at client computers, client computing, whatever it's phones, Chromebooks, Windows computers, Macs, this thing's going to be fixed or is already fixed. When you look at the cloud, and that's where the Intel culpability comes into play because they are, you know, it doesn't matter if you're running if you're running Linux or Windows or whatever, you can make whatever percentage claims, you know, who does what. Most of that is Intel.
Yeah.
And that's what I meant when I had written earlier. You know, Intel is the they're the primer, unfortunately. You know, it's like AMD's response to this was stupid. There's no doubt about it.
Hey, look but at
AMD
us.
they're a yeah. tiny slice, and they're mostly on the client side by far.
Yeah.
So their responsibility for this, such as it is, not a big deal. Them behaving stupidly is their own problem. But Intel behaving stupidly is an issue of a much larger scale. You know,
well, I mean, is it considering what 2018 may hold for them, you know,
well, it's like AMD has a pea gun in the fight and Intel has a nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
And, you know, unfortunately for Intel, you got to be a little more responsible when you
absolutely
are that weighted.
Yeah. You know? We could talk about this for hours, but we have so much more to touch.
But let's not.
Let's not. But let's take a moment and talk about our friends over at BNH Photo, bhphoto.com/GFQ. You can check out our recommendation list over there. BNH Photo is a professional source for photos, videos, and audio equipment, and so much more now. They pretty much have everything. BNH Photo is the smart way to shop with low prices, top-notch customer service, fast shipping, and no sales tax in 48 states. To learn more, check out the special deals for our listeners by visiting bhphoto.com/GFQ. That's bhphoto.com/GFQ. I actually have to make a trip out to B&H tomorrow because Jessica ordered me a beautiful 4K camera for the studio. I'm going to just give you this example. This is totally off, and I probably has nothing to do with B&H Photo, but she ordered me this Panasonic camera, right? She did all her research, and she actually went to B&H. And at B&H, they told her to buy the Canon that I wanted, the one that we use in our studio. They said, well, better for lighting, the way that it is. But, you know, when you start trying to find the gift for someone, like, let's say I want to buy Paul a really nice gift, and I know what he wants, but I want to go above and beyond. I may ask a couple other people. And you know what? She asked a couple people in video, in audio. I mean, a lot of people. And they all told her to get this Panasonic. And she bought this Panasonic. And guess what, Paul? It's terrible. It's abysmal. I mean, the quality is like 10 years ago compared to what I have right now with these Canons. So when I called up B&H, they're like, no problem. Just bring it whenever you want. Just drop it in. You could ship it. You could do this. Their policy is so easy to do. I mean, super, super easy. So I'm going to walk into the B&H Photo here in Manhattan and just trade it in for a new one, which will be great. I absolutely love these guys, and they're really good. They also have a great deal. If you're buying a gift, if you got a gift, and this is part of it, B&H Photo has extended their return policy. You have until February 1st of 2018 to return or exchange the items that you bought during a holiday season, which standard shipping conditions apply, obviously. Standard return policy. You can't eat the thing, chew on it, and then give it back to them. Just really, you know, it's amazing how this company is aggressively fighting the changes in the way that you buy products. These guys are unbelievable. I absolutely love them. I've been going with them for my whole life. My father was a big photo guy and a video guy, and we would go every weekend. We would go to B&H. bhphoto.com/GFQ. Check out our recommendation list over there. Let's go down a couple of other products, Paul. What do you think? What else was a big failure? Because I'm going to say, if I were to say one, it's not necessarily a tech product. That's why I don't want to concentrate too much, but it was the Equifax. Debacle. Considering almost every single person with a social security number had their identity stolen. 145 million people were affected. What percentage of grown adults in this country is that actually have social security numbers?
It's 100%.
Yeah. So, you know, I think a lot of the mishandling was how they put up a bogus website that pretty much told everybody that their information was stolen.
I wonder if those guys went forward to Intel and worked on that PR.
It could have been the same PR company. Well, at least Intel has like legitimate, you know, people in that field where I think their CTO was like a marketing person. It was something ridiculous from what I remember. They were another one that handled this. And then essentially that website was a scam to get you to sign up for their identity theft solution service that they offer. But think of that. You know, I would say that's on my list of fails.
That's way better than any of the ones I came up with, okay, that I can still recover from this document.
Yeah, give me some.
I mean, unfortunately, most of mine are PC and Windows related because obviously that's my focus. And this was kind of another tough year. I guess the big one is probably this is such an ugly issue. Like, we've kind of stopped talking about it, but you know that the PC market has now declined for what will this quarter be 6 years straight, right? An unprecedented decline in PC sales. There is probably no end to this. I've always sort of, well, I just over the years, I've sort of wondered when this would flatten out, and it's gotten close to flattening out, but it has not actually stopped. And now I'm wondering if this isn't just the new normal, like we're just going to slowly decline.
What percentage of a decline was it?
Well, yeah, I don't know for the full year yet because we don't have that. We don't have that in, but like, as for example, I actually, let me just bring this up real quick. Last year. But to put that in perspective, that is literally 100 million fewer PCs than were sold in 2011. So the market contracted by one third in 5 years. Now, a lot of that is because some of those years were huge, right? Like huge declines. The truth is, in recent years, that has gone down to kind of single digit declines. And I expect that the like 2017 over 2016 will be a single digit decline. Like I don't think it's that big of a deal. But you know, 365 was the top of the market. And again, to put that number in perspective, last year and expected for this year, Samsung says it will sell 320 million smartphones just by itself. Just Samsung.
Yeah.
Samsung. And I want to be clear about this. Just Samsung smartphones, not Samsung other phones, because they sell other phones too. Just that by itself is bigger than the entire PC industry. Not that, you know, 200 and whatever the figure is, let's say 250 to 265 million is probably where we're going to come in this year. Not that that is an insignificant number, but compared to the 2 billion or so smartphones, I think is the figure.
But also, you know, it's a little bit skewed, right? I mean, if you think about it. Because most people are buying phones every other year. A lot of people. Not, I shouldn't say most. A lot of people. Yeah. A lot of people are not buying a new computer every year or every other year.
Yeah, no, by the way, it's only one data point. And you know, the other thing is you could look at usage and so forth and how does PC usage compare to other devices and so forth. And it's not quite as stark.
Well, the lifespan, the longevity of the PCs are expanding, you know, but 10-12 years ago, people would say, well, every 3 years you need to get a new computer if you, you know, but now it's a little
bit
different.
You're right. But part of the flip side of that, and I think this is the more important aspect of it, is people actually use their computers a lot less, and they use their computers for a lot less. You know, if you were to go back 10 years and you were to, if you could imagine that things like Facebook or Instagram or whatever was as big back then as it is now, you would be doing all that stuff on a PC. But as more and more of our usage is turning to other devices, most people don't read on a PC. Most people don't play games on a PC. Most people don't do social networking on a PC. Most people don't even do their day-to-day productivity work, reading and responding to emails or whatever it is on a PC. So as you do less and less on a PC, not only do you buy them less often, you use them less often. And they become less vital to your day-to-day life. When you can walk around with a device in your pocket that's super personal and very important to you, you know, the PC just becomes less important. And that's it's the opposite of the virtuous cycle that everyone always talks about. Because developers don't really have a lot of incentive to target a market that's not particularly big, but also is not particularly active or engaged. And this is the one thing I always talk about, you know, when I talk about the PC market and why this is a problem. You know, we can talk about numbers all you want. I mean, there are between 1 billion and, you know, 1.8 billion, whatever the numbers of like PC users. But as far as like actual really like, super engaged, actively looking for new apps all the time, looking for new ways to take advantage of this hardware, it's a tiny, tiny number. It might even be tens of millions, like, or hundreds of millions at best. And it becomes a real niche product in that sense, you know, that there are certain markets where this is a big deal. Gaming is still a big activity from just a sheer numbers standpoint. Not, many, many more people game elsewhere, but a lot of people do game on the PC, and it's a lucrative market. There are creator markets for people who create whatever kind of content, from words to art to architecture to engineering, whatever it might be, programmers and things like that. I'm describing very small markets comparatively to, you know, minivan driving mom with a family who needs a device. And there are thousands of times more of those kinds of people, just normal people. And that's the issue. You know, the PC market is just not vital, basically, to anybody.
Yeah, it's an interesting change, and I'm curious how it's going to change in 2018 with ARM coming into play in the PC world. I'm curious if any impact they would have as far as sales go, overall sales, not taking away sales from another, you know, PC manufacturer. I mean, by Intel and AMD taking shares away in market share with that. But I don't know if it's ever going to go back up. I mean, maybe you're right. I don't think it ever does.
I think it's a slow decline. And we might see little plateaus and, you know, seasonal things. But I think the ultimate path is downward. And we can do things to slow it. And I think that's where Microsoft deserves some credit. I think a lot of the work they did with Windows 10 in the early days when they first were coming out with Windows 10, kind of bringing it back to its PC roots. I think a lot of people were very disillusioned with the direction that Microsoft had taken previously with Windows 8. And so I think that stuff was smart.
Okay, so here's a question for you. With the decline in the PC market, do you think any of it has anything to do with the fact that Windows doesn't get released like it used to, right? Windows was a once every couple of years type event. When they would release a new version, and a lot of people subscribe to the philosophy of when there's a new version of Windows, I'll go buy a new computer. They wouldn't go to the store, you know, that scene from Windows 95 where people are holding the boxes over the head. That never happened. You know, that was once. That's not how people upgrade. People actually say, oh, new version of Windows is out and has this and has that. You know what? Time for a new computer. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. My stuff overheated here because I had the curtain up.
You should just open a window.
Yeah, I should, actually. I don't even know if I can. It's still snowing heavily. Crazy. Yeah, sorry, guys. So that's my question. Do you think that has anything to do with the decline?
I say that from the perspective of users. Like, I just think it's a little too aggressive, especially for their business customers. But as far as Microsoft goes, I feel very strongly about this. They've done everything they can do, and I mean that across the board. They've done everything they can do to attract developers to this platform. They've done everything they can do to keep enthusiasts on Windows. They've done everything they can do, you know, to keep various customer groups engaged and by, you know, making it seem exciting and adding cool new features to Windows, whether or not we agree with them or the decisions they made. I mean, I think they've really, they've done an incredible job. This downfall is inevitable. And honestly, most, if you were to look back at any previous, I don't know, technology platforms or other industries or whatever, this is where it all implodes. And they've been managing the decline in a very intelligent way. And I think they've done a great job with that. And that's all you can do. And I literally mean, there is nothing that can save this. And if you look at the stuff they're doing with bringing Snapdragon to PCs, for example, again, it's a stopgap measure. It doesn't save the platform, yeah. But bringing that stuff to the platform does make sense. And it's going to help for the people who are using these devices. And so it's great. It's not going to solve the problem. It's not like, Snapdragon's going to be this huge success and PC sales go through the roof next year and everything's great and they go up again. And this was just a weird dip and it never happens again. Like, no, we may see little bumps up, and I hope we do. And certainly there are companies that have done great jobs of finding where the value, the profits are in this market, because selling cheap PCs to consumers at Best Buy doesn't work, but selling premium PCs of various kinds, gaming PCs, PCs for creators and so forth, does work. It's why Microsoft made Surface. They're trying to show the industry the way. This is Microsoft.
Can't hear me.
Now I can.
Yeah, you can. Okay, I don't know what's going on. This thing is totally overheating, so I don't know why. Something on the other side. How about on the phone side? What would you say was the biggest flop? You know what I'm going to go with? The Essential phone.
Yeah.
I feel like there was so much more buzz around this thing when it was coming out, and I guess due to delays and all this stuff. I mean, you really didn't hear much beyond it.
Yeah, I'm so mixed on this, because I feel like the idea behind the company, which extends beyond the phone, but let's just, focus on the phone, is a good one. And I feel that, Google has screwed up something that they had gotten right from time to time, which was this notion of a pure Android experience that was high value, low costs, flagship specs, blah, blah, blah. And I really feel like they screwed it up, and that Essential kind of came in at what could have been the right time with the right guy leading the company and so forth. And a lot of attention from the tech press and the industry, and it just kind of went nowhere. So
I think it did go nowhere. I mean, and I'm a little surprised by it.
I am too.
What do you think it was? Why do you think it went nowhere?
Well, because we get, okay, so this is just I'm just guessing here, but my take on this is that in my world, Andy Rubin is a big deal. In the broader world, it is not. And in many ways, Essential failed for the same reason that the Palm, I almost said Treo, but it's not Treo, the Palm Pre failed.
Palm Pre, yeah.
Which is that, in realistic terms, the way that people buy phones today has nothing to do with going to a website and ordering something sight unseen. It has to do with still going into a store and basically being sold on a device by someone who is either independent or appears to be independent, who works for Verizon or whoever. And I don't remember which one carrier sold the Essential phone, but it was probably Sprint, based on the fact that I can't remember it. And, that's kind of a recipe for disaster. It just becomes an also-ran. I think for a certain audience presented with this device out in the wild, something they'd never heard of, were not anticipating, it may have been very attractive. I mean, I think a lot of what they did from like a material standpoint was cool.
Oh yeah,
to design.
Absolutely. And that camera concept where you would have this modular camera that you could just connect to it, to these pins.
Still very interesting.
I still find that very interesting. And I do think we're going to start seeing more of that in the future. We're going to start seeing more of these add-ons.
Yeah,
I'm surprised that it's taken so long, because I'm sure you could build I guess you know what it is. It's the R&D more than anything else, right?
Sure.
How much time and effort are you going to put into selling a $200, I guess, phone camera to put on your phone that's going to be significantly better than what you currently have on your phone?
Yeah. I in many ways, these aren't directly comparable, but Essential to me is a little bit like Steve Jobs at Next, you know, where you just sort of assume this guy is going to succeed because he's amazing and he's got great design aesthetics and whatever. And actually, as it turns out, the world's not listening. So yeah. I don't know. Although I would say, you know, for whatever it's worth, I would tie with Essential the Google Pixel. But what that kind of low profile case does is it kind of returns the phone to its original form factor, because I always stick these kind of cases on the phones, and it doesn't matter if it's like a leather case on an iPhone from Apple or the various cases that like OnePlus supplied for the 5T or the kind of heavy fabric-y case that I had on this device before. They all hide the essential beauty of the phone. They have to, because there's no other way to protect the phone. Apparently my dog sees a wolf outside.
I guess so.
And honestly, it's funny because I find myself almost touching this device, and you can kind of see some of the more subtle design cues that were hidden with the other case. And I look at this thing and I think, you know, I see what they were trying to do here. Yeah. Like, it's not, they were close. And I think what screwed them up was LG, frankly, and especially the LG display. But for a company of Google's size and influence to screw up this badly is astonishing. And it's not the form factor, right? It's the million problems with this device. It's crazy how bad this thing turned out. Like, it's...
Which one?
It's Pixel 2 XL.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing. You know, I mean, I like mine. It's fine.
Listen, a pure Google experience. And I know, listen, so here's something interesting, okay? And I'm going to have to try this again this year. I've gotten so much feedback from Android users over the last couple of weeks that, you know, we always talk about Android rot. And I think it's an issue with Android itself. And it's not necessarily, you know, Samsung or HTC or LG that puts their own stuff like TouchWiz and whatever on there. I do think that it's a consistent issue with Android. But I do hear back from a lot of Android users that are using just the Google experience, no, not the Samsung experience, and they don't feel that there is.
Those people are wrong. And I there's something fundamentally wrong with Android. There's no doubt about it. I think I've told you in the past, the original Pixel XL that I had, I reset that thing down to the metal. And what I mean by that is I didn't go into a menu and said reset phone. I went to Google's site, downloaded the clean OS image, and used command line developer tools to completely blow that thing away and clean it and put a clean image on there. And the performance would degrade very quickly every time. I have literally just on the Pixel 2 XL noticed the exact same performance degradation. And I'll give you the exact scenario, because it is the most frustrating thing in the world, which is I pick up the phone and I want to take a picture. So I hit the camera button, the camera icon. I'm going to show you where it is in the screen so this makes sense. The camera, it's all washed out. The camera icon, the camera button is this thing
is
right
that,
there.
Yeah.
So when I hit that, it's slow. And it's so slow. Now, I was holding it this way, but I have to look at it to, actually, let me show it to you so it makes sense. Where that button, where that icon used to be is this thing here now, right? What that is the way you get into the camera roll. So the performance on this thing is so slow that when I bring up the phone, I hit the icon because I want to bring up the camera app, it doesn't load.
It doesn't load.
In that 1 second, I go to tap it again and the camera app loads. But now what I'm tapping is this camera roll button, and what it does is it goes to the last photo I took. Huh. I have done that over the past year about 1,000 times. And it's not me being slow to react. It's
slow. Yeah.
This is a fundamental performance problem, and it is happening with the Pixel 2 XL as well. This is exactly the problem that I had with the Pixel XL, the original one. And I'm sorry, but that is completely unacceptable. And
you know, I have to tell you, I'm in both ecosystems, and the more I use my iOS, my iPhone, the more I'm using iOS, the more I'm disliking a lot of the things in Android that I've been able to tolerate. Now, the thing that I absolutely love about Android is how Google Photos works and all the Google services, I can get that on my phone also.
There is something to be said for something that works, right? I mean, I know that sounds like such an obvious thing to say. The complaints that people have against iOS range from infantile to absolutely justifiable. I agree with everybody that it kind of sucks that you can't position icons in the home screen wherever you want them, like you can on Android. I really like that.
I get it.
I completely get it. But are you telling me that that ruins your phone experience, your day-to-day experience? Seriously? I mean, I use both of these things side by side. I use both phones basically every single day. I have been doing so for years and years and years. And I've tried different things, you know, layouts and whatever it is. And I got to say, you know, the one thing that is consistently true for the iPhone, and I use that iPhone 7 Plus for over a year, never had to reset it once for any reason whatsoever. I put developer betas on it regularly, upgraded from beta to beta. I never had a single problem. The Pixel XL, I blew that thing away at least half a dozen times.
Yeah,
at least
half. That's not a normal thing to do.
No, but it is normal. That's the problem. And that's clean Android. That's Google's Android. I don't know what to say. That's the experience. So the decision that people make is a personal decision, and I will respect it, but I will say that, you know, I think a lot of people are kind of biting off their nose to spite their face. I can't use a system that doesn't let me, you know, just to use the one example, put icons wherever I want on the screen. Okay. Yeah. Listen, I put the icons wherever I want on my screen. And all I'm saying is every time I hit that damn camera icon, I end up in the camera roll because it doesn't perform.
Paul has to go soon, but I know and he's going to get audio in about a second.
I got it. Yep.
You got audio now. There you go. Next week, we're going to do our, I guess, CES show, right? When is CES?
Oh, actually, next week, I'm going to be at CES.
Oh, you're actually going?
Wait. Yeah. Actually flying home on Thursday. why am I going?
The beauty of podcasting, guys, this is the first show of the year, and this is how we're starting it.
I think we're off to a great start.
Yeah. Oh, now you can hear me. You want to talk about really quickly any? So what, next week you're not available at all?
Yeah, I think next week's going to be tough.
Okay.
Just because of the schedule, yeah.
Okay. I think what I'll do, I'll get John Prosser on next week to talk about CES. I'll do something with news. Him. Yeah, there'll be a ton of news. I'll do a bunch of stuff next week for CES. And I'll leave you alone to do whatever you need to do.